With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What would you call news of Mitch Trubisky returning to practice on Monday? Good news, bad news, or just news, and why?
You know, I think it's good news. I think a lot of people kind of respond to it like it's bad news or just news, but you got to get your quarterback going. You got to get your quarterback up and running, and you look around the league, and there are a lot of quarterbacks that are not up and running. So when you're talking about young quarterbacks, the only way to really hope that the guy gets better is through reps, through the chance of playing more. And I'm all in on Mitch coming back. I think it makes the Bears a better team. I'll be very curious to see if he can run at all, if this hampers his ability, if they don't do some of the things that you would want them to do, if they are as one-dimensional as they might be with a quarterback with a bad shoulder, or they're afraid of injuring. So I don't even know that he's playing in the game, but the fact that he's back is a sign of progress, and we've seen quarterbacks play through this injury. So I'm all for it. I'm up and running with Mitch.
This is big news, and it's good news. You don't want to go into a game of this importance with your backup quarterback. I don't care if it's the year of the backup in the NFL. Mitch Trubisky gives you a better chance to beat the Saints than Chase Daniel. He just does. And I think if you see what happens around the league over the weekend, you see quarterbacks, when teams cover receivers, they play a lot of man coverage and they come after quarterbacks, the weapon that is used, you see Aaron Rodgers use it, you see Patrick Mahomes, you see Deshaun Watson, the great quarterbacks use their feet. Now, not saying Mitch has to be a runner, but he has to use his feet. If he comes back and he's able to do that, and Matt Nagy said he wouldn't play if he, you know, they say don't get hit. That's not football. Football is going into a game understanding you're going to get hit. So if he's healthy and he's playing, he has to learn how to use his feet when and then be a better passer in the pocket. He has to do a lot of things. But it struck me over the weekend watching all these great quarterback play by the great ones, and you saw it again last night from Rodgers, how they picked up the key first down or made a key gain by just scrambling downfield when the defensive backs were covering their men.
He had a great run in that game.
With their backs to the quarterback. That's awareness. That's what you get with when you get Trubisky back, ideally. He's not had a great start to this year, but everyone's talking about Mitch as if it's a completed story. It's an incomplete, and I think that he has a chance to change the course of his season and, frankly, the Bears season, because sitting there at 3-2 with the bye week, there's not been a positive vibe out of Hallis Hall. This can change things if he comes back and he performs.
Yeah, I think this is a huge game. I think it's good news. The Saints, you start looking at, you know, down the line conference playoff pictures. The Saints are 5-1. They're one of the teams that's going to be there. When they get Drew Brees back, they'll be even better. So this is a huge game, and I think having Trubisky back is a good thing. And this is no offense to Chase Daniel. He's a perfect backup quarterback. But I don't need to see any more of Chase Daniel, as a starting quarterback. He's an adequate backup. He gets the job done. He's paid well to do that job. But this is Mitch's team, like it or not. I mean, I know a lot of people right now don't like that, but it's his team. And maybe the time off with injury has helped him settle in a little bit, and maybe we'll see a more relaxed and better Mitch Trubisky when he comes back. And hopefully he does come back this week, and Matt Nagy was not committing to that just yet, but it certainly looks that way, like he's going to play.
I think you have to consider it to be good news. Yeah, he is not one of those quarterbacks we saw in the Texans-Chiefs game. He's not even one of the quarterbacks we saw last night on Monday Night Football, but he is the one we got here, and he is going to be the one that they ride with for the foreseeable future. It's not going to be Chase Daniel, and Espo, you're pretty much spot on there about Chase Daniel. He's a backup quarterback. There's a reason he's been in the league, and teams have wanted him on rosters before as an option if things go awry with the starter. But you know what he is, essentially. You know his limitations. You know his ceiling. With Mitch, there's still that hope that maybe, though we haven't really seen it too consistently, if ever, maybe there is another level or another floor that is waiting to be unlocked. He is only 25, and I don't want to go down the whole road of excuses that he's a young quarterback, he's learning, it's a new offense, it's year two, blah, 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 because we've been through that just a million times. But in terms of potential, there is still the potential there for Mitch to make one more step, whereas with Chase Daniel, you kind of know what you're getting. So it is good news. And no, he's not MVP Mitchell or anything like that, but he's a better option at quarterback, and you just want to get your starters in there and get healthy as much as possible, because guys are already dropping like flies everywhere on this roster. You at least want the starting quarterback back.
Yes, this is good news, and yes, it's big news. And the reason it's also good news, because he's supposed to be the number one quarterback. We need to see how he's going to respond to all of this. How he's going to respond to the injury. How is Nagy going to respond? Mully, you pointed out, will it be different now? Right? Is the playbook, we keep talking about the playbook being limited. So is it limited now? You know, before it was his legs were kind of one of his assets. And now if they're worried about him sliding or taking unnecessary hits, is that going to change? That's part of why this is big news. And again, your best quarterback, and he's supposed to be their best quarterback, needs to be here, David, as you pointed out, in a very big game. I know they're all big games in the NFL, but this is a NFC game, which makes it just a touch bigger. And you're coming off the bottom when you got a bad taste in your mouth for 13, 14 days.
Probably the most complete team in the NFC.
So we're going to see how I mean, this game might be whoever gets 9 points first might win this thing, right? If the Saints defense is as good as it's played so far.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
Kyle Long made 3 Pro Bowls, but just suffered a season-ending injury for the 4th straight year. If Long never plays another snap for the Bears, as expected, should we consider the 20th overall choice of the 2013 NFL draft a successful pick or an unsuccessful one?
Boy, not to hedge, but I think it's somewhere in between. And I don't want to be the guy that, you know, looks at this as a failure. That's way too strong. But I think when you drafted him 20th overall, you expected a little bit more in terms of availability at this stage of his career. You expected him to be a fixture for more years to come, rather than just the last 4 seasons have been difficult because the biggest ability is availability, and he has not been there. And so what started out as a career full of promise ends amid a lot of disappointment. And I think that when you look at what was possible with Kyle Long, the potential was unmet. And so there's a feeling that's a little empty when you talk about his career as a Bear. I think that we tend to overstate things in Chicago, like a lot of sports markets. And I think we overstated his importance and significance to the Bears because he was the best player on a lousy Bears team for a couple seasons there. And he was young and on the rise. And he was a guy that was pretty accessible, pretty good to deal with in the media. He's a terrific locker room guy. He's a terrific guy for us to deal with. He's likable. I wish him well. If this doesn't play another down in the NFL, there's a lot there with Kyle Long. I just avoid his brother's podcast, maybe, as long as they're talking about Mitch. But I think when you look at Kyle Long, I expected him, Mully, to be the guy that they maybe locked in at tackle for 10 years, 8 to 10 years. I didn't know, you know, when you move a guy to guard and you spend a first-round draft pick on a guy that plays guard, you know, you can probably find a guard somewhere else in the draft. So when you draft somebody, an offensive lineman that high with that much physicality, I thought he might always end up at right tackle, left tackle for years to come. And that he didn't kind of feels like a little bit empty as he walks away.
It's interesting. Yeah, I agree with you about the right guard thing. I just, you know, I look at the Bears draft picks, their first round draft picks, and boy, there is not a lot of there, right? I mean, this is the team of Chris Williams and Gabe Kareemi and bad picks all up and down the line. Shea McClellan. There, you can put together some horrible drafts for the Bears, and I'll be very curious to see how this turns out with the Ryan Pace era, frankly. But Kyle Long, you got to say, you know, 13, 14, 15, he made a Pro Bowl for you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to not think that he had a pretty good career. Compared to some of these Bears first-round picks, he stands out. He had some great dominant seasons. But unfortunately, it's like the old Hall of Fame argument. Unless you're Gale Sayers, you know, 6 years isn't enough, right? It's just not enough. So I don't think you got enough out of him. And I get it. He was been injured all the time. Here's the problem I have. He is a really good kid. He's a good guy. I really like Kyle mm-hmm. Long. And he's always been very cool to deal with. And, you know, you want a guy like that to do well. And I feel bad for him because of injuries. But he was kind of late to the party, right? And didn't really have as big a career as he could have. But the guy had a career. For the love of God, the guy had a career. And I think there's a lot of people in the league that never had one. And the Bears seemed to master in drafting some of them. A
few shots in there for the Bears drafting. Well-deserved, by the way. I think it's a successful career. I mean, listen, if we would ask this question after the 15 season, Mully, as you just pointed out, that's three straight Pro Bowl seasons. We would have all said absolutely this was a successful first-round pick. I'm not going to necessarily say that because of injuries, it's not a successful. It's just not as much of a success. I mean, certainly you can't blame Kyle for being the best player on bad teams. You also can't blame him for some of the injuries. I mean, you remember the ankle injury against Tampa Bay when he got rolled up. I mean, just a gruesome injury. And I remember, you know, in the locker room after that, covering the team, waiting to talk to him, just seeing him limp back there a year. This is the season after, and he had already had the surgeries, and he was playing, but he could barely walk. It's like, how is this guy even playing? Stuff like that, you know, with the injuries, it's really tough to, you know, objectively look at a thing like this. When I think he was certainly, you know, a Pro Bowl elite-level offensive lineman for the years when he was healthy, he just has never been able to stay healthy. And, how do you weigh that in this question if he's successful or if it's been a successful pick or not? I don't know. But I would still say that Kyle Long, overall, definitely on the plus side.
I mean, probably closer to successful than unsuccessful. When I think of an unsuccessful pick, it's a guy who got taken in the first round, couldn't even get on the field, you know, total bust. You know it when you see it. And Kyle Long certainly wasn't that. He was a guy who, while maybe overdrafted, you know, if you're taking a guard in the first round of the draft, you expect that guy to be a stalwart on your line for a decade or so, you know, like you guys kind of brought up. But the injuries did catch up to him a little earlier than any of us would have liked to have seen. So that kind of puts an asterisk next to his career. As far as a first-round pick, not the greatest. But, you know, Mully, as you said, compared to some of the other first-round picks that have been taken by this franchise, it looks a little bit better. But I want to hold the bar up a little bit more than what this franchise has done as far as first-round draft picks. So middle of the road. You know, if these are my only two options, I'm somewhere in the middle. It's just, it's a real shame to see what has happened to him, because the first 3 years of his career, you thought maybe he would be that guy who would be, you know, face of the franchise, leader, you know, guy you can rely on for 15, 16 games every season. And that just kind of dissipated the last several seasons. So, I mean, it's really tough for me to say unsuccessful, but I would probably weigh closer to that than a successful pick, given everything that's gone down.
The first round of the 2013 draft is absolute hot garbage. I just went through it. Okay, so there's 30 picks in the first round. 20 of the 30 never have made one Pro Bowl, let alone have been an alternate to a Pro Bowl. And if you do the after, you know, that they picked 20th in that draft, so you got 10 picks after it.
Did DeAndre Hopkins go? Wasn't that was the guy they were talking about? No,
right, and that's where I was going with this. So he was picked. He was picked 27. So there's obviously a big red flag. Like, imagine if he. But again, like who would have been throwing to him? And in that offense that the Bears were running since Kyle Long, what would they have done with him?
Jay, right? Baby, Jay and DeAndre Hopkins, sign me up. Greatest show on turf.
Maybe
that would have worked.
Maybe. You know, but with those, you know, Xavier Rhodes had some good years as a cornerback,
yeah.
Right? That would have been a guy that you'd have been okay with.
I know Kelce and Ertz were in the second round of that draft. They've been looking for a tight end for a decade and a half.
Once you get past the first round, it's a whole nother, right? But I'm saying that first round is really a ton of hot garbage. I mean, they also needed to change, like, culture around there. It was a culture time.
That's a good point.
And I think part of that was, unfortunately, you shouldn't have to be doing that, but the Bears were in a situation where they needed to do that. I really like this guy. Mully and I have had very fun talks about the value of a right guard and all that stuff. To your point, David, I would have liked to have seen the real invested experiment of him playing right tackle, because you also talk about wear and tear. The right tackle typically is your most unathletic offensive lineman
or your most powerful.
He's not moving around too much. He's not pulling. Okay. He's barely getting second level. He's trying to hold a position, seal a side of the field. And I think maybe that would have worked out, but that's in the past.
Phil Emery's very pleased with your answer.
Do me a favor, just kind of sit up. Ask me a question professionally and I'll answer it.
If you rank the teams in the NFC North after Monday night's game between the Lions and Packers, where do the Bears fall? Is there any question that it will remain the NFL's toughest division this season?
Yeah, I think there's a question. I mean, anybody watching Seattle and San Francisco? That might be, I know the Rams have taken a step back and now McVay's an idiot and you don't want anyone who's been within 5 feet of them. But that's a pretty good division now. I think that the thing that we learned, though, is that the Lions aren't a joke. That the Lions go into Lambeau and look like they should have won a game. Now, again, you can talk about whether they can win the big one and all that stuff, but I wouldn't count on just necessarily sweeping the Lions this year. I don't think that's a given. I would say that the Bears probably have as good a chance as anyone to win that division, but the Packers have answered the bell. They've been there and they've done pretty well. I'm very curious to see what happens with Minnesota, because Kirk Cousins, the last two games, has looked like a guy that you can rely on. And the question they're asking up there is whether or not they can get to the Super Bowl with him as their quarterback, believe it or not. Aren't we asking the same question in Chicago about the quarterback? So I think that the difference in the division is that Aaron Rodgers is capable of nicknaming anyone nastily and bringing them in and hitting passes to him. So that's the problem.
All this credit to the Lions is earned, and yet I can't get past the whole idea. Yet last night might have gone differently if they wouldn't have had 12 men in the field, and the field goal keeps the drive alive. They score a touchdown. What happens then? I can't put them past anybody in the division when you have the head coach still on the sidelines. I just think that prevents them from taking that next step. Bears and the Vikings, very similar. Very similar teams. Both want to establish power running games. The Vikings' running game is much better than the Bears right now. The Vikings' offense, much better than the Bears right now. The Bears' defense probably has an edge. It might depend on where that game is played. If you pick, which is the better team. The Bears obviously won at Soldier Field. I don't think the Bears are looking forward to that trip to Minnesota in December. So I think those are probably second and third. The Packers, give them credit. They're the best team in this division right now because of their defense, because of the way Aaron Rodgers makes everybody around him better. They run the ball, and they're doing things that aren't getting them beaten. I do believe this is top to bottom the best division in the NFL. The NFC West, impressive. The Seahawks, to me, are dangerous. I think Russell Wilson is an MVP guy. But I just don't trust the 49ers, and I'm not a believer in Jared Goff, and I think that's going to limit those Rams out west, and I think that makes the NFC North the best division.
Yeah, this is you could go in many different directions with this one. I will say this. Minnesota hasn't really played. Minnesota's wins are against weaker teams, and the Bears showed what a good defense can do to that offense. And, David, I mean, that an indictment on the Bears' offense when you say that Minnesota has the better offense than the Bears do right now, because you're right. And I mean, we spent all week of the Vikings game ripping on Kirk Cousins, and rightfully so, because I mean, what did Kirk Cousins do? I mean, he had a great, he's had some good games since then, but again, against weaker competition. The Lions, I mean, their tie is that opener against Arizona, which they were winning the entire time and kind of let Arizona back in. They should very well have only one loss with, you know, kicking five field goals last night, the penalties, which you guys have talked about already, against Trey Flowers. And the Bears are really a question mark because of the quarterback thing. And I think that's why, and, you know, it pains me to say this, the Green Bay Packers are the class of this division, and they have been for a long time. And they remain that this year because of the quarterback. And they actually have a defense this year, but I mean, it's the quarterback. It really comes down to that in many situations. And right now the Packers are 5-1 and they're playing good football. They got lucky last night. They benefited from some bad calls, but they're the top of the heap right now.
They are 5-1. They're the best team in this division. But taking a look at not only the NFC North, but a lot of the divisions, there's so many teams that are 3-2, 2-3, you know, 4-2. There's such a jumble of mediocrity right now, and things haven't really quite cleared in my mind anyway, to see who the class of either conference really is at this point. I mean, to me, I do like the NFC West a lot. I mean, say what you want about San Francisco, whether you believe in them or not, but they're 5-0. And I mean, that's already five wins you got on the board. You know, you win four more the rest of the season, you're still in the playoff conversation there alone. Seattle is excellent. And Los Angeles, I'm not ready to write them off either, even though Jared Goff has taken a step back with his fat wallet is weighing him down a little bit this season. I'm not sure what the problem is there, but I'm not ready to write off the team that was in the Super Bowl last year either. So probably NFC West to me is the best division. The NFC North this year, maybe with the exception of the Packers, but it kind of reminds me of how we talked about the National League Central, you know, with the Cubs and the Brewers and the Cardinals. Or is this really a good division, or are these three just okay teams kind of beating up on each other as we go on and see how it unfolds? So if you had to ask me right now, NFC West, but I'm sure when we revisit this in a couple of weeks and maybe the smoke clears a little bit and some of these records unjumble themselves and we see who's stepping up and who's regressing, it'll be a little bit easier to answer this one.
Yeah, I'd say it's the North. That doesn't mean that the Super Bowl representative from the NFC is going to come from the division, but I do think it's the best top to bottom.
You know, that's a good question.
It was a pretty bad weekend for a few NFL coaches whose teams are mired in slumps. If guys like Andy Reid, Sean McVay, and Jason Garrett are getting criticized, then why not Matt Nagy? And who should be getting more criticism, Nagy or Ryan Pace?
Jason Garrett, thanks the person who wrote the question for putting him in that company. I think it's a little bit
curious, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think
one of these things is not like the other.
Matt Nagy deserves criticism, and I think that he's gotten some. When you look at what the Bears are after five games, they're a disappointment, and I think offensively it starts there. You know, obviously they've had some injuries with, you know, Kyle Long and some other things, and with Mitch Trubisky. But I think that you keep waiting for it to be as obvious as it was last year, the effect of coaching, and you expect the play caller to come in and, you know, to scheme receivers open and to keep the chains moving and to figure out a way to get the running game, you know, kind of started, because it hasn't started, and the Bears are soft. And I think their identity through five games is that they're a finesse team, and that's not really a good look in this division. Now, if you're going to be a finesse team, you've got to be smarter than everybody, and you've got to score more than 15 points a game. And they're not really getting it done offensively. So that starts with the head coach, because the head coach is the play caller. He is the offensive coordinator. And to me, that's a bigger problem in terms of you're trying to assign responsibility or blame or whatever you want to call it than the general manager. This is a pretty complete roster. I give Ryan Pace credit for putting together a roster that fits what Matt Nagy wants. It's not a roster. Ideally, we talked to Olin yesterday, that is your power running game roster. There's not a fullback on it.
Yeah, that's
the
problem.
But I don't think your head coach wanted a fullback on it. So he has all of the toys. He has these are, you know, if you want to go with the Parcells thing, he made the grocery list. Now cook the dinner.
Yeah, you know, I think that that Andy Reid's team is just beaten up a little bit, right? And I think that Sean McVay, they've taken a step back, and it seems like it's related to the quarterback as much as anything. So I guess that's on him, but I still think he's doing a pretty good job. Jason Garrett, I know that Jerry Jones kind of backed him, but they might be backing him into a different
kinda
corner, if you know
kinda
what I'm
backed
saying.
Kind of backed them.
Matt Nagy's not having a great year. There's no doubt about it. That offense is sputtering, and it's not doing well. And the one thing that Ryan Pace did was put together a pretty good defense. And so I think that the defense has been bailing the Bears out. You'd love to see them come out of this bye week with some new ideas and some fresh thoughts and some ways of moving the ball offensively. And it's going to be a big game. To find out what they do against the Saints is going to be a big game, because this is, you know, these Saints are not the best version of that team. We will, again, see the best version of that team, but they are 4-0 since the backup quarterback has taken over. And I don't know that that has as much to do with the quarterback as it does with Sean Payton being qualified for a Coach of the Year award that Matt Nagy won last year. I know that people will back a guy like Matt LaFleur because it's so unusual to have a guy run an offense in his first year and he's a young guy. That it's the Matt Nagy effect, apparently. So maybe wait a couple years before you start giving guys awards. Ryan Pace, is Ryan Pace in trouble? Is there any point where they brought the guy in to be a draftmeister? Is there any point if things don't work out?
He traded all the picks. What kind of draftmeister is he?
But he traded up for a lot of players now. You know, where are you at with Leonard Floyd? Where are you at with Mitch Trubisky? These are moves that were made moving up to get guys that you can sit here and
It's a tough
about.
Question, but it's not one that you can adequately answer until you see more of Trubisky.
And again, I think we got to wait till the end of the year before we, you know, start getting the knives out and sharpening them. But I think that there, you know, if you look at the resume and you really break down what Pace has done, he hadn't done much. He hadn't won much. So finishing dead last in the division for the first 4 years of his tenure, and then finally breaking through with a playoff
appearance.
Not a run.
Win a playoff
appearance.
Game.
So yeah. They need to make the playoffs. They need to win in the playoffs. And then we'll give everyone all sorts of awards and stuff, and we won't be talking about who should be criticized.
Yeah, guys, the Rams thing is interesting, too, because Jared Goff has just been abysmal this year. And he was the top overall pick in the draft when he came out, and you know they just extended him. They got huge money. But he's been hot garbage this season. He has not been good. And, you know, that's a good Rams team, as we saw last year. But to the question now, to the Bears, I do think Matt Nagy should be getting criticized, right? I mean, he got all the praise last year. He knows this comes with the territory. When your offense is not getting the job done, it's not getting the job done. And that's on him. In terms of Ryan Pace, and it pains me to do this, and I'm sure you guys did this yesterday, but I watched the Texans and the Chiefs on Sunday because there it was right there for me. And I can't watch either of those guys without thinking the what ifs. I can't. And I know this is an old conversation, but I just can't. Because if one of those two guys were on the Bears, I think we're talking about something completely different. You had the three quarterbacks in that draft. You traded up to get one. And the one you traded up to get thus far has been the worst of the three. And the other two are having MVP-like seasons. The one of them was the MVP last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even close when you're talking about those other two quarterbacks that you're talking about. Mitch Trubisky, he's not even the same galaxy as these other two guys. And that's really what it comes down to for Ryan Pace. You know, he was brought in, Mully, as you said, as this renowned draft expert, and he's either reached on bad picks or underwhelming picks in the first round, or he's made flat-out horrible picks in the second and third round as well. And that doesn't even begin to cover some of the free agent cash that he's doled out to guys like Trey Burton, Charles Leno. I mean, we could go back to 2015 if we're talking about bad contracts that this guy's given out. Do we remember Ray McDonald when they tried bringing that psychopath in here? So Ryan Pace, I think, deserves the most criticism. He's been here for longer than Matt Nagy, and he's given him all of the ingredients, as you said. So if Matt Nagy's final dishes that he's preparing don't look or taste that great sometime, take a look at who's stocking the cupboard.
I'm getting hungry.
I'm also getting a little hungry.
Yeah, what's with all the food talk all of a sudden here, guys?
Talking about pink underwear.
What about socks?
I'm kind of confused by pink underwear.
You're the only one who's brought up pink underwear, and you've done it repeatedly.
He is the only one.
Very disturbing.
Subliminal hit.
Who has brought up pink underwear today. That's something to worry about. You know, it was a bad weekend for the kind of Andy Reid tree. You know, we talked about it, I think it was 2 weeks ago now. You know how football seems to go like in circles, right? All of a sudden now you got to be able to run the ball. You know what these teams can't do? They can't run the ball. You know why they really can't run the ball? It's not because their offensive line stinks. It's just they haven't been given the opportunity, and you lose that edge. You see we don't see it with offensive linemen, but you see it with the running backs, right? When they get a big run, they grab that fake bowl of cereal or bowl of soup or whatever, and they're doing that spooning in their mouth, feed me, feed me, feed me. I'd like to see an offensive guard or center, when they pull around a corner or get second level and knock the snot out of a linebacker, do that motion, feed me, feed me.
Would you criticize him, though, for being a showboat?
Let us get downhill some more.
You'd criticize that, though, wouldn't you?
No, absolutely not, because I love that stuff. It's not flipping a bat off a sacrifice fly that you're going to show every kid in America and say, oh, you know what you should do? You should use your bat as a javelin and whip it out there and hit one of your teammates or a kid on the other team because you hit a pinch hit walk-off home run. Ooh, congratulations.
Playoffs.
Not for long.
That's true.
I don't quite get the question.
The Cubs reportedly interviewed Astros bench coach Joe Espada and reached out to former Phillies manager Gabe Kapler. Are they viable candidates, and does either have a realistic shot at being the next Cubs manager?
Yeah, I think that Joe Espada has a realistic shot, but he has kind of a Joe Girardi kind of shot. It's you know, if something were to happen to David Ross, if there was a bus accident or if there was some sort of a personal issue where he had to take leave. I just don't see anybody but David Ross getting this job. Gabe Kapler, is there an element of, you know, we were with him and he's our guy and we're giving him a stamp of approval for all the other jobs that are open? Why don't you all get on board with interviewing him? I don't know that
feels
he's
that way a little
candidate.
Bit.
Is that wrong to say?
No,
I'm just not sure if he's a serious candidate. And I think it's David Ross's job, and I guess we got to wait for the World Series.
David Ross is the favorite. Theo Epstein has hired Gabe Kapler before to be a manager. He was a minor league manager in the Red Sox organization. I don't know what that is. You know, when you look at Gabe Kapler's, you know, I guess failures in Philadelphia, you don't know if that is too big of a, you know, I just don't know what to think of him being added to the list. You know, Theo did hire a former Phillies manager before, and it worked out pretty well when they hired Terry Francona, but I don't think this is Terry Francona. I think Espada of the two has a more realistic chance, but I just don't think it's anybody but David Ross.
Yeah, I think the whole Espada thing reminds me kind of the Davey Martinez, Joe Maddon thing back a few years ago when Martinez was getting a lot of looks, but he wasn't getting the jobs until the Nationals hired him. That kind of reminds me of that. You're looking at a very successful team, and he is the bench coach for that team. But I don't think he's going to get the job. I think David Ross is going to get the job. Gabe Kapler does nothing to me. And I also wouldn't be opposed to Joe Girardi. I know, David, you guys have talked about that as well. But to me, it's Ross by a mile, it looks like, what at this point. But they haven't made the move yet.
Sure, they're both viable. I mean, if they're being interviewed, then that means that Theo and Jed and whomever else believe that they are realistic and viable and respectable candidates. But as intriguing as Joe Espada is to me, I'm not going to sit here and act like it's not David Ross's job if he wants it. It's been David Ross's job if he wants it. With Mark Loretta maybe having an outside shot, having actually been on the bench for a season, you have to consider him as well. But if it's not David Ross, I think we will all be very shocked.
Well, see, I like the fact that they don't have to rush with David Ross. It can't hurt to talk to these people.
Because nobody else wants him?
And Kevin, that might be a viable point. I mean, why haven't...
Oh, it is, to me.
Why hasn't anybody else asked?
Good question.
Or he only fits with the Cubs, or that's it? Here's the other thing. You know, Kapler could end up being a guy they bring in to be a first base coach, a third base coach,
I don't know.
A bench coach.
He may get the Giants job.
I don't. Well, and you're right. I mean, he's a candidate. If you read the stories, the guy, the general manager out there, whose name escapes me, loves him. Right? Is very fond of him. So that's a no. Sabian's been gone for quite a while now. It's a metric. Another one of these metrics.
It's a metrics marriage. Yeah. Yes.
But that's beside the point. So you don't have to rush. I don't know I'd have to look up exactly what the rules are about when you can announce. Here's the thing: if they really wanted Girardi, I think we'd already know that the Cubs have hired Joe Girardi. Okay. I don't say they don't want him, but if they wanted him, you know, you have to worry about all these other openings, mm-hmm. the Mets, the Phillies, and whoever else, right? So these are all candidates. I'm glad they interviewed the Astros bench coach yesterday. Fine, whatever. I either want Ross or Girardi.
As you know why you don't have to worry about hiring?
As a fan, I want Ross or Girardi. And also for the score and good for business, I think Ross or Girardi are both good for business.
But you know why you don't have to worry about the timing with hiring David Ross because nobody else is interviewing him.
Right. I'm glad they haven't interviewed Mike Maddox so he could get two holes in one yesterday ahead of game three. See
that was
story?
Great.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
Come on.
Yeah.
I'm sure that he
no
put
ball
his
for him in this
hand
area.
On the shoulder of the greenskeeper and he said, thank you. Can I keep that ball?
Maybe his daughter's caddied for him.
He'll have plenty of time to golf here pretty soon.
Wah, wah. That does it.
That's it. All right. That's the 5-5.
I had to stop. I don't know what you were getting at. On the Cardinals, but it's 5:58, so I stopped.
It's Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.